Welcome to Art Throb, where you'll find inquisitive conversations between Art Throb host Kate Savage and artists, writers, performers, producers, and artistic entrepreneurs about their work and all things arts related. Get to know who's doing the work, who's making the arts happen, and who's keeping them exciting and accessible. Gain an insider's view through these exchanges and a glimpse into the wonder-filled world of creative individuals.
Hello, and welcome to Art Throb, the bi-weekly podcast. I'm your host, Kate Savage, and this week, I'm really pleased to have with me as my guest, Kevin Nance. Kevin is a photographer, arts journalist, and poet living in Lexington. His photographs have been shown in solo and group exhibitions in Chicago, Portland, Danville, and Lexington, including at the Lexington Art League, the Lexington Public Library, the University of Kentucky Hospital, and Arts Connect Mobile Gallery. His two collections of photographs and haiku are Even If, published by the University of Kentucky Arts and Healthcare, 2020, and Midnight, published by Act of Power Press in 2022. As a journalist, Kevin's work has appeared in The Washington Post, The Wall Street Journal, USA Today, The Chicago Tribune, The Chicago Sun-Times, Poets and Writers Magazine, The Lexington Herald Leader, Ace Magazine, Undermain, and many other publications. He's the host of Out and About in Kentucky with Kevin Nance and co-host of Kentucky Writers Roundtable, both on Radio Lex, a local community radio station. So welcome, Kevin. We're here to talk about this fabulous book of photographs that soon will be published, a book called Geneva's Garden, The Four Seasons of Beauty in Lexington's Gratz Park. You spent a year during the pandemic photographing this garden in Gratz Park. Tell us a little bit about how the whole project came about, how you were invited to do this, because I'm assuming you didn't just trespass.
No. No, you know, I had walked past the hall of Geneva and Elvis Donaldson at 3rd and Bill many times right there. It's on the corner of Gratz Park looking across from Transylvania University. There's kind of an interesting story, by the way. The house was originally built in mid-19th century, and in its earliest configuration did actually face Gratz Park. It looked east. Around the turn of the century, a new owner, or maybe it was the same owner, I can't remember, built this new portico that is on the north side of the house. So it now faces Transylvania University across the street. It's known locally as the only house that ever turned its back on Gratz Park.
Oh, how cute.
Yeah, it is true. And, you know, I guess the original entrance of the house is now just, you know, there are some windows. There is no entrance. But I was familiar with the house and admired it. When you walk by, you can see that there's a beautiful garden, although it's a gated property, so you can't really get in that close. But I understood that it was a very impressive place, and I admired it. And then Geneva Donaldson had become a fan of my photographic work on Facebook. And she wrote me a message on Facebook early in 2021 saying, "Why don't you come and photograph my garden? I would love to see what you see in it." I was impressed by what struck me as her understanding that, you know, photography is about seeing. And that idea of seeing and seeing what I see versus what she could see or somebody else could see, that never went away. She, many times in the process, and even in the essay that she and Elvis wrote for the book, they talk about the idea that they were always fascinated by how I could see things in the place that they couldn't see or didn't see, and that the photographs reveal these sort of little small bits of beauty that now, they actually are looking for. They find themselves when they're in their own garden. They are looking for those same kinds of moments of beauty. And the other thing that I think became very important as we went through the process was the idea of many years ago when I was trying to learn photography, I struggled with it for a couple of years and wasn't happy with what I was getting. And then I had this sort of epiphany, which was that I needed to stop taking pictures of things and start taking pictures of light falling on things. So almost all the pictures in the book are what drew me to that particular place, that object, that flower, that plant, that leaf, was light falling on it in an interesting way.
What's interesting to me is that you would say that, because here in my notes before we started talking, I had written the word light in capital letters with an exclamation mark. And then I thought to myself, well, really, you're sort of a plein air photographer as opposed to a plein air artist. Follow the light, terribly important to them, and they paint small and capture the light as it falls. And I thought, really, you're kind of a plein air photographer. So I'm glad you mentioned the light, Kevin, because that's very striking in your work.
Well, I think that I developed an idea that the most beautiful things in the world can look really plain in a photograph if they're not well lit. And the most ordinary things can look really amazing if they happen to be in the right light. That is a truth about photography. You know, the word photography literally means writing with light. Photo means light, and graphy means writing. And so I've always taken that to heart and tried to look where the light is falling.
Have you ever had any photography classes?
I actually have only had one photography class in my life, and that was way back in 1986. I was in the United States Army working on a Post newspaper at Fort Belvoir, Virginia. And back in those days, we did our own photography. We actually had our own dark room, and they set me to, the Army had a 10-week graduate course at the University of South Carolina, which was taught by Jack Hilwig. And in the course of that, I received sort of a basic grounding in the history of photojournalism. It wasn't artistic photography, but of course, you know, they overlap. But we learned about the basics, composition, working with light, working with exposure, and all kinds of things. It was kind of photography 101. And the nice thing about that is Jack, who taught that class, later moved to Eastern Kentucky University and taught there for, I think, more than 20 years until he retired a few years ago. I've continued to be in touch with him. He lives on the West Coast now with his wife. She's retired. And he wrote a lovely blurb to the back of the book at my request. And I'm delighted to Jack.
In fact, he said in his review, a good photograph can capture the look of a place. A great photograph can capture the very essence of that place. And I think that he's really hit the nail on the head, because that's what you've done in this book with Geneva's Garden. You've really been able to put your own experience and your own thoughts. And at one point you talked about how having this project during the pandemic saved you from depression and gave you an opportunity to be outside and to be able to still hold on to the fact that the rest of the world in terms of nature was still happening. It was still cycling through the seasons and everything was still okay, although the human world was falling apart and people were tragically dying. And I think that you say half an hour in this refuge, immersed in its intoxicating sights and scents, was a life-saving medicine. And I think, honestly, Kevin, that that's available to all of us. It doesn't have to be during a time of pandemic. I think that people need to, and I'm sure you'd agree, need to enjoy and experience the outside world more than they do.
Well, there's a reason we seek out the gardens at Ashland or the Arboretum at New Paine and Gratz Park itself. They are healing environments, and they're places where you can remember that, yes, the moment may be troubling, may be scary, but the world just keeps going on. And I definitely felt that way. A lot of times I would just go and start photographing in the garden at Geneva's. And sometimes she and or Elvis wouldn't be home. I had their permission to do that. And then other times she would pop out. And I remember one day she came walking out into the garden when I was photographing, and I said to her, "Stop right there." And the reason I said that, and her face kind of fell because she immediately knew the only reason I could have been saying that was I had been told, I think the day before, that I may have been exposed to someone with COVID. As it turned out, I repeatedly tested negative over the next 3 weeks. I kept obsessively going back to make sure I didn't. And so that fear of COVID, you know, was really present. And I think we need respite from stuff like that. And it was just a terrible time. And so, yes, I mean what I say when I say that coming to the garden and also just having a project I felt I was making progress on was deeply important to my mental health. And the fact that, you know, they were so welcoming, we'd become over the period of time, I think, pretty good friends. You know, we don't honestly move in the same social circles. You know, there are several rungs up the ladder of society than I am. But I think we become very good friends. And every time I see them, I feel like they're my close friends. That's been terrific.
I think one of the things that also struck me as sort of an unmentioned theme or thought throughout this whole project is the sharing. The fact that the Donaldsons were prepared to share their garden with you. And then the idea that they would then take that a step further and turn it into a book so that, you know, obviously the whole world can't come traipsing through their garden, but through this book, and now is another level of sharing that beauty. There's sort of a repetition of that word sharing, sharing nature, sharing friendship, sharing feelings at the time when everybody was jumpy about the pandemic. And I think having a project was life-saving as well.
They do have a lot of events, you know, at their home. They host a sort of a semi-famous, I should, maybe it's locally famous, 4th of July park at their home. And then they usually do a big Christmas thing too. So they agreed to allow their home to be used for a charity event. I wrote an essay for a book called Pagan Babies, which includes pictures by John Ashley and Bob Morgan. And it was a benefit for Movable Feast. And they very generously allowed their home, and they provided the refreshments. And it was a lovely event. And so they are generous. But as you say, I mean, it is a private garden. You can't just stroll onto the property without permission. If you were a garden person and you would like to look at gardens and pictures of gardens, I think you'll like this book. And it will be, if I may say so, a nice addition to your coffee table. Yes, it's a hardcover, and it's about 100 pages, and I'm going to be signing copies of it at this launch event. We're going to have a launch event in Geneva's garden, the very place that is the subject of the book, on April 28th, which is a Sunday. It will be from 1 to 4 p.m. on that day, and I'll be there. And Geneva is going to considerable lengths to make it a special event. She's hired a DJ. There's going to be a live DJ on site and providing music. There will be refreshments, and it's going to be a lovely afternoon.
It sounds like a sort of a full-blown afternoon tea party or thing like that.
Yeah, absolutely. People will be able to walk around, see the garden. There's a beautiful koi pond. The fish are sort of recurring characters in the book. It's divided into four seasons. Each of the season chapters is introduced by a wide photograph of the fish in those seasons. And so the fish became kind of a theme.
They sort of punctuate the book with the Row, Row, Row the Boat poem as well, which brings me to kind of ask you about the titles you've given your pieces, Kevin, because some of them are captivating in themselves. There was one that caught my eye. It was a beautiful photograph of an open magnolia bloom. You've called the image Southern Belle, and inside is the stigma, a beautiful yellow and pink stigma for this magnolia that in fact looks just like a boy, woman, or girl enclosed inside these beautifully white, velvety magnolia petal. It's just a yummy photograph, but I thought to call it Southern Belle was also, it just kind of tickled my funny bone. I know you've got your own sense of humor. I could see it.
It was Geneva who told me, I did not know. Did you know that magnolia blossoms only last a day or maybe two before they start fading?
No.
I thought they'd be around for weeks or something, but Geneva set me straight. No, they're like daylilies. They don't stick around for more than a day or possibly two, depending on weather. And so there's a fragility there that I like. We also think about magnolias as a southern thimble or emblem. But in fact, of course, you know, magnolias grow all over the United States, or in most parts of the United States, including the Northeast. So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to say that magnolias are a southern plant and yet we associate it with the South. But I think of Geneva as a bit of a southern belle. I mean, I know that the term has taken on maybe even some negative flavors over the past few years, but I think she's the best kind of southern belle, which is somebody who's elegant, and she's just a beautiful person. So I thought of her in connection with that. And in fact, she would occasionally, during the process, Geneva would send me, she would snap pictures on her phone, and she'd say, "This is blooming. You need to get over here." And usually by the time I got over there, it was gone. We were probably a couple of months into it. I think when she had a shift where she started seeing possibilities for me as a photographer. So she did kind of, she became my spotter. You know what?
Oh, that's sweet. That's funny. But I'm sure you took lots and lots of photographs. How did the actual selection process work for you?
I think that, you know, the way it works is I shoot a lot of frames, I shoot a lot of exposures, and then I take them home and I put them into an editing program called Lightroom, which is a subset of Photoshop. And that allows me to see the image fairly big on my computer. That point, it becomes what looks the best to me. And I think those lessons about composition that Jack taught me back in 1986 come into play. And I, you know, I'm conscious of, as we talked about before, the light, the way the light falls on things is there. Another big thing in photography is what's going on in the background. Are there distracting things in the background? And if so, can I find an angle? Because this is maybe important to say, these photographs are very lightly edited. I mean, yes, they're edited. There's usually some toning that intensifies the color, you know, sharpens the image maybe slightly. But I don't move things around. I don't take out things or put things in. I don't do composite photography, in short. And so when I'm in the field looking at something, I'm always thinking not only about what's in or about what the subject is, but what's in the back. And if there's something in the background that I know won't look good, then the challenge becomes, well, how can I move around and exclude that distracting?
But how did you distill all those images down into the ones that made the cut for the book, Kevin?
I was on the property shooting probably a minimum of twice a month, and sometimes maybe three times in a month. I would just come home and just work with what I shot that day. So I didn't let them pile up. I mean, I'd go through the shoot of that day's shoot and pick out the best ones, and I would put them in a folder. It wasn't as daunting as you might.
Well, and it was evidently not as academic either, and it didn't involve a panel sitting around a table.
No, that's right. And I, that's one really beautiful thing about this project, too, is that, you know, it's all me. I mean, not only is the photography by me, I designed the book as well. Now, it's also true that Elvis and Geneva had input. They, you know, at one point, for example, I had the titles overlaid on top of the photo. And they kept saying, I can't find the title or it's hard to read. And so I ended up moving those titles off of the photograph, and it's now underneath. I think that was a good, they were right.
Good decision. We would be remiss if we did not at some point talk about your camera. So what is it that you use?
You know, I'm going to tell you, I mean, my camera is nothing special. If you talk to people on a certain level in the photography, yes, they're all about their equipment. You know, I shoot with a very simple Nikon camera that I've had for 10 years. It's not anywhere near the best camera. I mean, and yes, if I could afford to buy a Hasselblad, would I get one? Absolutely. But I can't, and I don't. I use a digital camera made by Nikon, and I do use the Nikkor brand of lenses. My two go-to lenses, for anybody who wants to geek out on it, I use a 55mm to 300mm zoom, and that's probably my go-to lens, which allows me to get close to things which I can't physically get close to. And then for wider shots in often for very close-up shots, I use an 18 to 55 zoom, which gives you the option to have a very wide-angle shot. It's not quite a fisheye, but it's pretty wide, and so you can see left to right, you know, virtually anything that's in front of you. I used to use a macro lens for really tight shots, but what I've found is that the wide-angle lens works just fine for that. You just have to get really close on to something. You can literally have the camera 2 feet away or less, and you'll still be able to get it very sharp.
Let's switch horses here just for a little bit and talk about other work that you have. I know that right now, until July, you have a show at the main library downtown in Lexington. You're showing 2D photograph works framed along with 3D work by Jason Akhtar Kavari, and the work or the title of the show is Faces. So you have somehow, somewhere seen faces in these images that you've taken that are not actually portraits, really. They are just shots of buildings or a pipe or the tree or some abstract shadow that actually connotes to you, at least, some sort of a look of a face. I've seen the show, and I could spot the face in many of your images, but not all of them, Kevin, and that, again, is kind of the artist's eye. Talk about the show with Jason that you have.
I had a conversation with Doug Tattershall, who is the library's gallery director. I had had a show at the East Side branch a couple of years ago, but it had been seen very little because it was during COVID. I opened the show, and I think the library and everything shut down within a week. So I didn't have a whole lot of eyes on that show, but this time I'm hoping better. This show is at the Central Library at Main Street in Limestone. I think you said before we went on the air that it's the best display space gallery in town, and I agree with that. It is a wonderful gallery. It has a flexible nature. When I talked to Doug about having a show in there, he said, well, you know, this gallery works best when you have a mix of two-dimensional and three-dimensional. So the photographs in this case are posted, they're hung on walls and on sort of movable, I don't know what you would call them, stands or plinths around the room. And then Jason's three-dimensional work, which are mixed media assemblages, are on tables stands all around in kind of the center of the gal. So the idea was I would do 2D, Jason would do 3D. My thought was, wouldn't it be nice if we could have a single theme that both of us could engage with or express? And I had a flash, and I seen and admired Jason's work, which I had seen across the street at the Pam Miller Art Center. He had a show there a couple of years ago with Constance Grace and then Christine Kuhn. And I had been impressed by, there's kind of a humanoid quality to many of his pieces. They look like people, or they have faces, or they have bodies in some cases. And then I thought, well, I have a body of work that I've shot over the past decade or more that are this kind of face picture, in which one of the earliest ones, I'll just tell you, I was standing on a street in Chicago and I was looking at the side of this apartment building, and I was drawn to it for some reason, very ordinary. It had two windows, both of which had blue glass, you know, that sort of blue block glass. And then there was another, I think it was some kind of pipe that ran underneath, and there was something just in the middle there, and then there were things going on. And all of a sudden, as I was wondering why I liked this house or this building, the building, it said hello. Yes, it did. It lit. It was the weirdest feeling. It was one of the strangest moments in all my years of being a street photographer. Is that I suddenly had this the very strong sense that this building was looking at me. And there were the eyes, there's the nose, there's the mouth. And that was one of the earliest ones. And that show, that picture is in the show, and it's called Hello, because that's when I had the sense of the house was saying to me. And then over the years, I kept seeing these faces. I mean, there's another piece in the show called Zombie. It's one of those walls in Chicago where, you know, people stick posters. I think, you know, it's whatever's coming up, and then they tear them down and they put more up and they tear those down, and it becomes this sort of accumulation of tables and stuff. And I was passing again a wall, and I had a similar experience of looking at it and thinking, why am I drawn to this? And boom, I saw the face. And it's a very scary looking face, zombie face. And so over the years, I've seen faces in flowers and a lot of architecture. There's a wonderful, I think, picture. If you go around town, there are these kind of old electrical boxes that are no longer in use. And they're rusted, and the inner guts of the thing are just hanging out for all to see. And most of them probably hadn't been in use for at least 30 years, maybe 30, maybe 40. And I saw one, and it has this big sort of round mouth, and it had the two eyes. And I thought, wow, there's a face. And it's called, that one's called Shocked. And so that just kept happening and has happened over and over. I've done just recently, just last week, I saw an elephant's face in a you know, I'll post that picture, and you tell me if you see it, and it has the trunk coming down. I don't know if this is evidence of me being mentally ill, or just having a strange sense of recognizing faces. And there is actually a word for it, and it's pareidolia. It is a phenomenon that scientists have documented, and it's stronger in some people than others. And apparently it's very strong in me. And Jason has that same thing. He sees faces in like wood, you know, the wood grain of logs and pieces of joinery, you know, like metallic things in hardware stores turn out to have faces. And so we were very much in sync on this. And at least in my case, I can't speak for him, but I can tell you that these are found objects, but the art is in the recognition. The art is seeing what's there, at least as I see it. It's the same sort of thing maybe that Man Ray and Duchamp were doing back in the early part of the 20th century.
I think one of the cool things about this show, Kevin, is that it does cause the visitor to stop and look and pay attention, which we so infrequently do. And it's fun to take it in and try to see it the way you've seen it. And I think as an artist at heart and as a photographer, you are able to capture things that then give us another window into the way to look at work, way to look at the world. And I want to thank you for being my guest today. So I've been talking to Kevin Nance, whose book, Geneva's Garden, will be published later this month. There'll be a public launch, so look out for that online. And he also has an exhibition of photographs at the main library downtown. The show is up through May 12th, where he's showing work with Jason Akhtar-Kavari, and it's titled Faces. So again, thank you for being my guest today, Kevin. It's been delightful as always.
Thank you for having me.
For more information about this and other Art Throb podcast conversations, visit the Art Throb page at www.artsconnectlex.org.